to the Pages Speak. I'm Pastor Stephanie Page, and
I'm Joe Nathan Lee Page. Hey, what's up, though?
And we are so excited tonight about our show. Yes. Misconceptions about Black fathers. Tonight we have with us some wonderful men, some wonderful fathers, who are going to speak to some of the things, some of the misunderstandings, some misunderstandings, and actually give some truth to what's really going on with Black fathers. So we're going to start with letting you guys introduce yourselves. First, we have Pastor Robert A. Daniels.
How you guys? How's everybody doing? This is Robert Daniels. I just kind of saying a little bit about myself. Just kind of going.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I am 31. I'm the father of one daughter who is 1.5. And I have a son that'll be here sometime around the end of November, beginning of December. I'm a Black father. There you go.
There you go.
All right. All right. Okay. Right up under him, we have Keyshawn Davis of the Black Circle of Wealth and a whole bunch of other things, an up-and-coming minister and Power Kingdom Life Ministries. Come on, say something, Keyshawn.
Hey, how y'all doing? My name is Keyshawn Davis. I'm 30 years old. I'm a father of 3, 2 girls, 1 boy.
You want to tell us about some of your endeavors a little bit? Okay, we're going to come back.
And Minister Roland Walker, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm going to keep it short, but as far as the age, I'm going to tell you my kids' age, so that'll kind of give you some kind of idea. I just look young. My oldest is 25, my youngest is 22, so, you know, that should tell you about my age. I'm a Black father, I'm going to just go into a little bit about, like, I done had cussed both
minute.
My kids.
One minute.
You want to get into that?
Don't get too deep yet.
I think that's kind of an intro, but we're
ready to get in there. We're in there.
That'll pull it there. But yeah, I'm Black father, bottom line. Yeah.
Black fathers, yes, representing up in here. And this over here to the right is this gentleman, this illustrious man, apostle, wonderful man of God, giant in the spirit realm, man of God.
Well, let's say I got kids, I think I forgot. It's a lot of them, about 7.
Eight.
Okay, completion. Amen. Let God do what he do tonight. Let's go.
I'm going to do an introduction and then I'm going to let you guys just go for it. There is a conception that has been a perception by the media, by a lot of society, that Black fathers are not there for their children, that Black fathers are not responsible, that they don't spend time with their kids. It's really a misconception. I was reading an article where a young Black father was saying, you know, he took his daughter to the park. And several times he would be approached to say, it's so good to see, you know, a Black man involved with his children. And, you know, and he kept getting those kinds of responses. And he was like, I know a lot of Black fathers who are very involved with their children, who, you know their children. Some of them are married to the mother, some are not. But they still take a part in their children's lives. So a lot of times we'll get missed and we'll get stereotypes about Black fathers, about Black men, that they're not there, that they're not responsible, that they're not, you know, respectful to the baby mothers and things of that nature. But statistics actually show that that's very much not true. And in regards to Black fathers, statistically, there are more Black fathers involved with their children in many aspects in their life, and even other nationalities. So we just want to hear from some Black fathers about some of the misconceptions and, you know, some myths that you all want to bust.
All right. Come on, bring it in.
Of course.
Whoever jump out.
Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, go ahead. I think one big misconception that I've felt and, you know, that I've seen, like, kind of going back to your story, is that Black fathers have an aversion to being very engaged. So sometimes it's this idea that Black fathers are nothing more than financiers or just sperm donors. And, you know, sort of kind of what you pointed out before, to the extent that, like, that persona is so, been put out there so much that people act like it's an enigma when Black fathers are just fathers, like, literally just do what dads do. And so, you know, like, that's definitely something that I think that I've experienced, that I've felt. I've had people come up to me, you know, I take my daughter, I call that, say that's my rider. So when I get home from work, she already know we going somewhere. We going to the park, we're going to walk, we're going to the zoo, we doing something. Daddy here, we about to do something. And, but, you know, but to me, it's just being a dad. Like, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not doing anything special. It's my kid. So, yeah, I definitely think that is a misconception that exists, that Black fathers only really give to their kids financially or just make them.
I want to quote something. Data from the National Center for Health Statistics shows that the majority of Black fathers do, in fact, live with their children. The same study also showed that Black fathers are more likely to feed, bathe, diaper, dress, and play with their children on a daily basis than their white and Hispanic counterparts. So this is actual data that shows that Black fathers are actually very much involved. Statistically,
so. Well, I know that I've been involved with my sons, you know what I'm saying, my younger, basically, what most everybody. I get involved with everybody, but I'm just sick of the, you know, the way the media portrays everything that you see out here on TV. From everything that you see, is always something that they try to prepare or perpetuate. For all of, you know, for all the world to see, to get even this type of information, even think this information is valid. So how, you know, we get so much going on against us, and then now we got to actually, you know, come to this type of point just to make a misconception or bust myths. I deal with my sons all the time. Even now, they've grown just about. I still deal with it.
Can I go?
Yeah, go.
All right. So, I mean, I'm going to piggyback what she said, data. And I think that data is correct, but they want to go into the old data because I think it was a time where it was not a lot of Black fathers. And I'm explaining from my perspective. When I was coming up, my father wasn't around. Hardly nobody father was around as far as my family and my friends. Like all my homeboys I came up with, it was rare that somebody had a father. It was so rare. When I met somebody that had a father, I was kind of in shock. I was in shock. That's how rare it was. And I remember different instances where, like, I meet a dude with a father, say, your father never taught you that? And I used to remember how I used to feel like, father, like, that's a foreign concept to me, even what I've seen with just my household and my family, right? So what happened is that me and everybody in my generation that came up, said they're going to take care of their kids when they had kids because they didn't want to go through that same thing. So what you see is so many more people, so many young Black men taking care of their kids now. So I think that's old data before they're trying to hold that, because the whole thing was destroy the Black man, would destroy the family, they get the fathers out the homes. And you see all that stuff happening with everything in the 60s and 70s when they were destroying the infrastructure of everything they was doing with the civil rights. So it was a time where they had destroyed that. But when you had that all those different men pull away, and then me and other so many other guys come up without a father, they said we're not gonna go through that again. So that's why you see so many men taking care of the kids, but they still want to have that same narrative, that same situation, so they could tear the Black family down. But that's changed. And I noticed even when I talk to mentor young men, even with the next generation, they're even more stronger to it with being in their kids' life. It's rare that that they want to pull back out of that. So that's just old information, trying to keep the same lie, got the same thing from the past, same thing they want to just keep going in. And that's changed. It ain't even the same no more. But there was a time when that was rampant, but it changed because it affected us. And we have more opportunity, more finance, more resources to take care of the family now. So it's like the people coming up from my day, you know, a lot of people, even if they had a bunch of kids, they were taking care of the kids. They're doing something. It wasn't like it was in my day. They were just gone.
Yeah, and I'm gonna piggyback off what he said, because that's my situation. You know, my father wasn't around, so you know, that gave me an extra motivation to, when I have kids, to, you know, be more present and be more active. So so that was absolutely correct.
I think what Roland brought up, I think what Keyshawn just thought, I think that's very potent. I think kind of shifts the conversation like in a very interesting way, because you know, myself, I think a lot of young black men have a father wound, if you will, right? Like a place where their fathers came up short in some way, some fashion or another. And I do think that motivated the next generation. You know, there are a lot of things that I do out of a commitment to make sure that my kid's not going to deal with that, you know, as long as I'm breathing. You know, like it does kind of change your psyche. Like, as long as I'm breathing, my kid not going to deal with what I dealt with, at least from the aspect like of that fatherhood stuff. You know,
yeah.
No, it's perfect, but there's certain things my daughter, my son is not going to deal with, because I won't let it, you know, like that's not going to be their story. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say that probably is motivated by the fact that, like Roland talked about, there was a whole generation of men that came up in our community and the fathers were absent, or they were irresponsible. They were, or they had too many kids in too many places, so they really could only give you a little bit at a time because that's all they had.
So looking at even that scenario, because a lot of things we talk about and how it's been actually perpetuated historically, we can trace it all the way back to the times when African or black men were used to father or to produce children, but they weren't allowed to be fathers. They were produced children because a lot of times, especially back in slave times, African or black people were considered to be commodities. So they would create children and then they'd be swept away. So then after that, we had generations of fathers that were emotionally absent out of a sense of trying to not be too attached, you know, because, you know, of the pain or the things that were perpetuated there. And then we had the civil rights movement. And then we had, you know, a lot of black families, a lot of fathers that were there. But then we had the drugs that came into the communities and other things that came, and then a lot of incarceration, and the black fathers were absent again. So it's almost like it's in waves, you know, where people have to really make a decision to not allow the things that are going on in society, the things that are going on around them, economic things, or even a desire to protect themselves from hurt, to cause them to run away. But I just think it's just admirable, because I do see this generation really like buckling down. I see a lot of fathers in this generation even fighting for custody of their children, even having custody of their children, making it a real world point, you know, to be there. So I just want to commend you guys for that. And then I want to just ask, in regards to, because you brought up the fact that, you know, there were conscious decisions to do things differently than your fathers who were absent. So what are some of the things, I know Robert's talking about taking his kids to the park, what are some of the things or some conscious decisions that you make and things that you do to shift the narrative? Things that you know you consciously do to shift the narrative.
Consciously, I try to be like more passionate like about things as far as like the stuff my kids like and love, and you know, trying to encourage them to do things that they, you know, deem what the things they want to do. Like you know, growing up as a kid, you know, sometimes well, me as a kid, you was told what to do. You know, you ain't really had a choice to do a lot. You feel me? It was either you gonna do this or, you know, you ain't gonna do nothing at all. So now I'm giving my I think it's like for me, it's like a slight overcorrection. I give you the choice, but you know, it's just a good choice. I'm willing to see where that take you, you know, and I'm willing to encourage you to keep going. So I think that's one of the things that I consciously did to raise my or help involve myself in raising my children.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Roland, I'm going to go because I know you got a lot to say on this particular topic. So I'll just go ahead and piece in that. One of the things I think that I think we all kind of, you know, like whatever happened to you that was negative, I think we as human beings, we all have a desire to, like you said, kind of shift the narrative. Like, how do I adjust that? So one of the things that my father struggled with, two things he did, like say having kids in multiple houses and providing. So one of the things that I do is the only kid person I have my kids is my wife. That's it. Ain't gonna be nobody else. You know what I'm saying? God forbid, you know, something happened to her. That's it. She's the only, that's it. So Ray Michelle Daniels, only person I have my kids. So that's something that I was conscious about. Like, you know, that I was conscious about that when I was single and I was abstinent. Like all of those things were running through my head. Like I can't afford to make these mistakes. Another thing that I do to try to shift that narrative is I work hard. You know, I make sure I can provide for my children. Like that's important to me to be able to provide for my children. Because there was times that, you know, my father, I love him, God bless him, he wasn't able to do that. So for me, it's very important for me to be able to do that. So if I lose sleep, I lose sleep. If I, you know, like none, you know, if I got to put in extra hours, I'll put in extra hours, but I want to make sure that my children are provided for. That's something that's important.
I try to make sure that when it's talking about our kids is to try to expand their minds to be able to do better things, to be able to prove that the fact that your skin color doesn't really matter is really about your mind. So I try to do certain things that will inspire them to do greater. You know, I got one that's trying to get into business for himself. He's trying to go to school, cut hair. You know what I'm saying? Anything that try to break and shape any kind of narrative, I want them to be free from these chains and these propagandas that's going on. I don't want them to grow up to think that they have to give in to whatever society is saying about them. No, it ain't even like that. Matter of fact, forget what a society say. Let's supersede what it's talking about and show them that a whole nother life, just like all of y'all, and you know, whatever happened in your past, you didn't allow that past to become your future, and you're not gonna let that be your children's future.
Right.
And that's something that we need to fight for. It's just like on the football field, you gotta fight for every inch. I'm fighting for every inch for my sons to be great, my daughters to be great, nieces, whatever it is, my family to be great. We, you know, we need to be teaching them that the sky is the limit and you can go beyond, go into space, supersede what they're talking about. Don't you let anything hold you back from achieving your goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
I think, of course, you provide for them, do all these different things or whatever to make sure you're a good father, get them involved in different sports, be active at school. But I think the most profound thing when I think about it, I did for my kids was that I made a decision early on that I would never lie to them about nothing. No lie about nothing. I don't care what it is. If I don't want you to know something, I'm just not going to tell you, but I'm not going to make up a story. So they knew what no Santa Claus, no lie, right? Mm-hmm. So what happened with that is they knew they could always trust me. Regardless, like if my son have any kind of financial things or whatever, anything he needed, he don't deal with nobody on his other side of family. Tell my father about it. If it's something he need to trust me with, give it to my dad. You know, they know that about me. Now, one thing I thought by sowing the seed, I thought I had this blessing. Well, if they know that I don't lie to them about nothing, they won't lie to me. Well, that didn't work. That did not work. You know what I mean? That did not work. But, you know, they know if I tell you something, it's gold. If I tell you something, it's the truth, it's gold. If I don't know what I'm talking, I'm not going to speak on it. But with my kids, I try to be a person of integrity. But I know for them, for sure, I had to make that as like a foundation. So no matter what happens, they know they could trust me. If they don't like the situation or understand it, they know my father. I hear my son even say it to people like, my father don't lie. And they're like, man, whatever. Now, he's 25. This ain't like he's a 10-year-old believing that. It's just I've established that in his life. And it's been a bigger blessing than I thought it would be, but that's just something as a black man, like laying the principles down, like for your family. And I think that's important, that it's not just about us taking care of the kids and being a body. Like, what are you instilling in them that's going to make them great, that's going to give them a substance, that's going to give them value and character and who they are, so they can take what they learn from the father and bring that to their family and their lives and their community. I think that's what's really important about even this whole topic of the show, like black fathers being there. But what are we doing? You know, what's the significance of a black father? You know, because we've been lied to so long about history, who we was, we wasn't nothing, and all this kind of stuff. And you ain't nothing, you can't be nothing. It's like, even you look at some aspects, like when Barack Obama got elected, was running for president, it's just so you see so much negative, like, man, that man ain't gonna win. I'll vote for him, like, man, I hope he don't get killed. You know, I was just thinking, and just the whole 8 terms, it blew my mind, because it's been such that we're not going to accomplish that. We'll never let that happen. But, you know, that's the whole thing about having something as a father, sowing into your seeds, because if you sow something great into them, they can accomplish great things. Like, you know, like before you could say, I could be the president one day. I went back, you know, when he was a kid, like that was just kind of, hey, that's a nice idea, but the black man, but it happened. You know what I'm saying? So it's important as far as we put that out there. That's it.
I think it's awesome you guys are talking about, you know, being examples so that your kids can see, you know, what a black father does. And the thing is, it's important for black fathers to walk as examples, as the head of the household, leaders, you know, to sort of like pave the way. So just by show of hands, how many of you all had your fathers in your life?
At the end, for me,
growing up.
I had a stepfather.
Okay. Yeah. So for the most part, so most of y'all didn't really have a strong. Who all had your father in your home for the majority of your lives? Any of you?
Not me.
Okay. Yeah. So I need to ask you all now. Since you all had a lot of you all were saying that, you know, you all knew what you didn't want to do or what not to do. So what sort of gave you the inspiration of what to do? Because you all knew what you didn't want. You didn't want to be like what you all had to grow up with. You didn't want the example that you all had. That was, you know, when you all were coming up, being absent or going through different issues. And, you know, some of them did fit the stereotype.
Well, you got to answer the question. We learn from what was not done in our lives to be able to bring forth what we should be doing. So sometimes you can learn from the things that are not present. And then when you become a father, you, like Robert said, that basically I'm not going to allow the same thing to happen.
Yeah, but that's what everybody pretty much said that. But yeah. I wanted to ask, did you all have a mentor, pastor, someone that you could look up to? Someone that you saw, was it Cosby on TV?
You know
was
what?
It anything that you all
you
saw?
Just hit me with Cosby.
No,
Cosby,
nothing.
Rose model.
Nothing.
Nothing. Rose model. Nothing. Look up to when you all were coming up.
Because I didn't even believe Cosby. So I'm gonna tell you like that. I didn't believe that type.
He was a doctor.
He was on TV. Man. It wasn't happening.
So, can I jump into this one really quick? Because this is really so key right here. Because even if you have some, you admire Cosby, somebody from a distance, that still ain't good enough. That's like a goal and you want to reach that goal, but you still don't know how to get there. You got no blueprint. You just see a good destination. And because we do what was modeled in front of you, even if you got a bad father, right? Even if you got a bad one, you still could pick up some good things because you're going to model whatever's there. But if you ain't got nothing, it's really kind of hard. So you grasping that stuff. So the first thing you do is everything that you didn't get, you say, I'm going to do that. But that doesn't mean that you still model how a father should be on a great level. And I'm going to say what I mean by that on a really intense level. This is a real issue. I'm going to take this all the way back to the Garden of Eden. When Adam was in the garden, it wasn't no issues. He's just doing what God told him to do. Eve come along, and then temptation happened. Now, this is what happened. This was the problem. Adam was principle-driven like a man's supposed to be. He wasn't thinking about that fruit. He wasn't thinking about that tree. Eve got moving her emotions, and he fell under her and he moved with his emotions. So what you have in a lot of situations is that man actually had been said, okay, I'm going to do this better by my father not being there. But if he didn't have a model of principle and he had a model of emotions being raised by a woman, he still might not be doing everything correctly. You know, so it's still a gap. That's why you can have a guy have some children by a woman, and then when it get too tight, he bounce. I'm tired of this chick. Because the principle ain't deep enough. He moving by his emotions. She get on my nerves. We ain't together no more. So I ain't taking care of kids no more. But if he had the raw core principles, like the establishment of a man like he's supposed to, no matter what, I'm gonna hang in there and handle my business with those kids. And for me, I grasp different stuff from different men over life, even like older cousins, different stuff, picking up stuff. And from just being honest, I was always 2 years behind on other men because it was so much missing because there wasn't nothing there. You know what I mean? So it's like, well, how my man know about this and I don't know about that? Like, about time I get the mentality, it's like I'm 2 years behind. And then I just started really pushing myself in it until I got ahead. But then the root of it is that we got to have these principles. So like, if you ain't got that male in your life modeling that your mom could tell you all this all day, but she is not a man, you know? And everybody's different, you know? But for the most part, a woman is more emotional and they're going to make the decision off that. Well, a man's supposed to make the principle and then it uses emotion to push the principle. So I don't want to take up too much time, but I've seen this in a group of men all together trying to put together something. And one guy had been in jail. One guy used to sell dope, you know, jab in jail, but tough guy. Other guy good in business. So these are all different kind of aspects of men. Another guy, you know, he had a regular life, but it was like everybody talked, but his attitude was always different than everybody else's. And I was like, what's the distinction? The distinction, he was raised by his father. None of these other men, one of them, none of them. So you got about, let's say, 8 guys right here. Everybody got their different perspectives. But when it came to how to deal with stuff, his had such a stronger, intense, more point. And you would think, well, the guy, he'd have been through all this stuff in the streets. This guy that he'd been in all this stuff, this guy had been, but they was all raised by a woman. And when it came down to it, a lot of times the justification, I could see the emotion where it was like, that ain't got nothing to do with it. As a man, how it's supposed to be, when you say you're going to do something, you're supposed to do it. And like, you know, and I don't know what culture in Africa it is, but they don't have a word for Cain. You know what I mean? So like, if you look at all the stuff we stripped over time, as we trying to get all that back, that's what like being a Black father is about, just being back to that core. Like, I'm going to take care of my kids no matter what happens, no matter what goes on. I don't care what's going on with the chick. We break up, whatever. I got to be there for them. And you see more Black people coming up like you've never seen before in this time. And I think they want to keep that stigma and that nasty data out there because they don't want us rising up like how we are and being strong and taking care. There's more people taking care of the kids. So they don't want that out there because Black people are rising up like never before. You know, we got control of almost everything. You know, you can see all these athletes, they just say anything and do whatever they want to do and make power moves. But I think I'm just going too much into it. But the whole point is this, that they want that out there because they don't want us to advance like we advance. And you see more Black men, more power, more people raising their kids. And you see with the power lap, we could just take over and do what we're supposed to be doing from the beginning, like we already had it before they took it.
If I could jump in.
Go ahead.
Just from that point. And I think it's a very interesting conversation that you posed, Mom. You said a lot of us as Black men, we find ourselves driven by what not to do versus patterning our behaviors after what of things that we knew were right. And you know, even as you can hear Roland, if I'm just being candid, I think that for a lot of us as men, there can be a frustration and an angst and a hurt because you're trying to learn how to pattern yourself, how to become a man. And oftentimes you can feel like you're having to figure it out by yourself, right? Like, how do I do this? Like you said, I know what was wrong. So I got the pieces, those puzzle pieces, right? I know which puzzle pieces weren't there, so I could pick those up. I know I got to go to work. I know I got to be a man of principle. I know I got to keep my commitments because I noticed those weren't there. So I know which ones I need. But then there's always, sometimes you feel like there's additional pieces to that puzzle that are missing. And that can be a very painful thing. I know myself, I've been very blessed, very, very blessed, because I have had some men in my life that I've been able to look to. And I have gotten some puzzle pieces from, like, I speak about them often because how important they are to me, but both of my grandfathers. One grandfather, my mother's father, was probably the hardest working dude I've ever seen breathe air. Like, this man can currently barely breathe and he's still grinds. Like, he can't, you know, there's no quit. This man does not understand quit. It's not in him. And so from him, I believe I gathered a tenacity to always be able to find a way. Like, there's never been, at least when it comes down to surviving, taking care of my family, making sure that my kids are okay, that my wife is taken care of, it never enters my mind that I can't. There is a way. And if I will it, then it's going to happen. At least when it really pertains to that. From my father's father, I learned the importance of cherishing your family as a whole. He was very big on his family, both his immediate family, his extended family. And that's for me where I think I get that from is wanting, like, knowing, like, to be a patriarch in my family, be a male in my family means that I'm a unifying force for all the people in my family. Like, you know, if no matter who's has differences with what, if I'm there as a man, I'm supposed to be able to bring my people together. So that's something I garnered from him. And then from so many other men, from my stepfather, Joe, he's another one. There's no quit in this man. I've seen this. If nobody believe in him, he believe in him. He don't need a cheerleading squad. So that's something else I picked up. Like, as a man, you have to be convinced of your own vision before anybody else catches it. You got to be convinced of that thing, and you got to go for it. Whether you got cheerleaders or not, you got to keep doing it. From Pastor Holland, my current pastor, one of the things I learned from him is balance. How to, as a man, how to go for everything that God is putting you to go for, but at the same time, keeping your family whole and intact. Like, and never letting your goals overrank your family and the importance of your family. So I can say, yeah, I've been blessed that I have come into encounter with men, but I will say I had to grow and become intentional within myself to take in what was being presented in front of me. Like, sometimes we get caught in the rut and we go, I didn't have. You get so focused on what you didn't have that you're missing, that you can miss what God is laying out right there in front of you. Sometimes God is bringing men around you for you to pick up things about what it means to be a man and what it means to be a father. He'll put different fathers around you. You just got to be humble enough to forgive what you didn't have and accept what's coming to you. So that's my little spiel.
Keisha, you want to say
something? You going to say something?
I'm about to say, yeah, well, And what Robert said was absolutely correct. And it's like with me, it was the total opposite. You know, I didn't have a grandfather, grandmother, none of that. You know what I'm saying? I was at home. It was just me and my siblings, my mama. You know, I had a stepfather. You know, but that's why I believe what I learned from him. That's where I got my wanting to own my own business and you know, just you know, be my own boss, so to speak. I think I got that from him. But yeah, I never had, you know, that, you know, so I feel like I never had, like, you know, the ability to be like, all right, my you know, grandparents, I can learn from them, or I can learn this, or I can learn that. And I honestly feel like I had to learn everything that I know about being a man, period, on the fly. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just had to go through it, learn it, you know. And you know, that could be kind of, you know, that could be a good thing or a bad thing, you know, it depends. But like you said, you have to humble yourself to be able to accept what the people that God bring into your life to maybe be a father figure. And that's something that me personally, I'm working on, because, you know, I'm one of those people that's just, I never had one, I don't need one, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, if I had to figure it out, I've been figuring it out on my own this long, I'm gonna just keep on figuring it out. And now that I'm 30 and, you know, it's kind of hard for me to receive correction from another man, you know what I'm saying? And I've been not receiving it and figuring it out on my own all this time. So, like you said, you know, you gotta humble yourself, and I'm still learning how to do that, because it's a lot of people in my it's a few people that's in my life that's you know, helping me become a better man, teaching me things and you know, of that nature. And I just gotta humble myself and, you know, accept that, you know, instead of, you know, trying to do it on my own accord.
What I want to dispel, I know women can't really raise men all the way, but women have a big part, especially in my life. I had a grandmother, an auntie, and a mother, right? And what they taught me, the value was being able to be loyal and loving your family. And that kind of stood with me. I know they can't really make me a man or teach me manly things, you know, knocking hammers and stuff. They wasn't that type of people. But what they taught me was the value of being able to be they were present. So they taught me some stuff that a man, my father was working in the plant somewhere. He had land and all kinds of stuff, but he wasn't taking care of me. It was the women in my life that really brought me to Christ. They brought me to church. They, you know what I'm saying? They bust my head when I came. And believe me, they were some tough ones, man. You know what I'm saying? If they wasn't men, sometimes they got down like they was.
It's the women that ultimately, I mean, as a kid, that I had the most, you know, respect for and fear. They, like, if you talk about disciplining, I was more scared of my mama than anybody. So right. I know women, they can't, you know, teach you all the nuances of act like being a man, like as far as like Pastor Joe said, like hammering stuff and fixing stuff, being Joe Fix It. They probably can't teach you that, but they could teach you a lot about how to care for people. And I think that's another thing that as men we learn it, because as you said, yeah, Roland, that fathers are there was a point in time when fathers were absent. Those men were being raised by women, so they were learned to be more nurturing to their children, you know. So now you got a whole group of men that learn how to nurture, learn how to, you know, do cook, clean, you know, do a whole bunch of stuff to help, you know, advance their household. And that's all because, you know, that was a large group of us men who grew up around women who said, hey, you gotta this is a part of life too, you know, and you need to learn it.
Shout out to the sisters.
If I could jump on that real quick, I think
I have to jump in only because we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
I've got one quick point.
Great conversation, and we're gonna have to do a part two because just talking to you men, hearing what you're saying about the misconceptions and even about the things that you all are going through in life, is something that people need to hear. Quite often, I'm gonna say this just as we close it out, quite often, you know, you don't hear men really, really just talk and be real. But one thing about the Pay to Speak, we keep it real, ain't no pretenses. We're not looking for a bunch of celebrities to come out with a whole bunch of sound bites. We're just talking about what's real life, what real people go through, and what real people are doing. So, you know, we're gonna have to, again, talk about the misconceptions of Black fathers. But, you know, unfortunately, we're out of time. But I'm going to let you guys get a closing remark quickly. You got to move out a little quickly. And we'll start with Brother Rome, then we'll go around.
Cool, real quick. So one quick point is that, like, women pretty much have, I think one of the biggest things for me is that I saw it affect the head on women. A father's not being there. All the stuff the woman had to go through, all the struggle, all the raising the kids by herself. That was another motivating factor because my mom was the matriarch of my family. She took care of four generations. That's why I got into real estate. That's why I got into ministry, all the stuff my mom did and showed me. But it was like, you see the women, a lot of us saw women, our moms go through all this stuff. Like, I don't want to be having all this weight. My mom, you know, on next, you know, have my financial, all the financial on the kids like that. So I think it's so much the balance. You know, because even when I came up, the last point, one of my kids, the mom was not in their life. I basically raised this child by myself. And even though I did everything I could, I just said, flat out, it was my daughter. It was some stuff I just couldn't get to her. And I was trying, but it was just some things I couldn't get to her, even though I tried to do my best. But we need that balance. And it starts with the father being the head. That's it.
Yeah. Got some closing remarks. I would say, kind of echo the sentiments of those one before. I think, you know, I think we're all Black men, so I just want to give just tip my cap to Black mothers, because even as Roland talked about, there was a generation of Black men that did drop the ball as fathers, and those Black women had to figure it out. You know, I commend my own mother, because she's the one that taught me, in essence, like what I learned about my kids never going hungry. Learned that from her. My kids that I've gone hungry, that I got from my mother. I've told her that many times. So I do want to just say, just tip my cap off to Black women, just because you all had to carry that load and y'all figured it out, you know. And it is something to be said that there's a new generation here that is carrying our society forward, and that's, and you all played a role in that.
Right.
And y'all did play a role in that. And us going forward. Because y'all didn't drop the ball. Y'all could have, but you didn't. So just shout out to you guys. And yeah, man, I look forward to having more conversations like this. I think this is powerful. I think it's important.
All right. Keyshawn, you got the last note. You and then pass the job.
Well, my closing remarks is I just want to shout out to all you gentlemen for being here. Tip my hat to all for being amazing men, amazing fathers. Y'all make this world a better place. And yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Right.
Well, you know, just like we, you know, I just want to give a shout out to Deborah Page, who held it down with six of us. It was six of us, and we was all crazy and mad, running around in the neighborhood doing all kinds of stuff. And she showed that diligence, that if nobody else is going to take care of you, I don't care if your daddy don't do it, I'll do it. And that's that mentality for me is like, if anything, I'm going to take care of mine. You know what I'm saying? Regardless, I don't care what I got to do. I'm gonna make sure, and I'm going to prove the point that we can be a family structure And especially as a man, I gotta, hey, if I gotta feel my way through it, where the will, there's a way.
Awesome. So you guys, you know, we're about to sign off, but you all hold on even after we log off. But we're gonna have to do a part two. Don't know if we get to it, but we're definitely going to get to it. Again, I want to give a shout out really quickly to my father, Adrian Austin Jr. That's one awesome dude. And even though he had two daughters, I do know how to hold a hammer and how to hammer and how to cut and how to mow a lawn and everything else.
They sure do.
Strong woman.
You know, hey, no problem. We do what you got to do and hold it down. So it's like, I just want to say, you know, those who have parents and even, you know, all of us, we all can make a decision. And that's what it really all comes down to. Mm-hmm. Make a decision. Make a decision. And I sing a song to my granddaughter all the time. Like, you can do what you want to do. All you got to do is put your mind to it. And the thing is, with all of these Black fathers, the great Black fathers that we're looking to here that are fighting the misconception and the stereotypes, what they did is they put their mind to it. They decided that they were going to be good fathers, regardless of the situations they were in, regardless of the situations around them, regardless of even the things that may have been coming against them to try to hinder. They made a decision. So I want to say hats off to you guys. Until we talk again, this has been the Pay to Speak. Oh, don't forget to buy my book, Gracefully Losing My Religion, and next week's show, Addicted to Image. That's going to be a good one. So join us next week, 9 p.m., once again on the Pages Speak. Until then, we love you. God bless you. Bye-bye.